Welcome, one and all, to the Pop Culture Podcast by Fantastic Geek. Continuing yet again our Star Wars Rebels rewatch after a quick respite on Ant-Man, which we won't discuss right now because A, we're talking Star Wars, and B, we have not recorded this ahead of time without seeing Ant-Man. But you know who has seen Ant-Man, regardless of when you listen to this or even if you're listening to it as we record it in the past? It's Pete. Hello, Pete.
Hello, Matt. Hello, everybody. I am ready to build my own lightsaber.
Wow, that's impressive and actually well-timed because today we're talking about Star Wars Rebels Episode 110 by our numbering reckoning, and it is entitled something, Pete, which I have not forgotten, Path of the Jedi.
Yes.
We have it ready to go, surprisingly. It's going to be opening with a shot of the ghost not moving on Lothal. And we're going to go on go. 3, 2, 1, go.
So yet again, a very pastoral opening here. And we go into the ship.
I wish there was more to Zeb's eyeball design, which I do not say for the purposes of humor. It's just a big yellow ball. Maybe put some... Oh, who were those? There's some alien bunch in the prequels and in Clone Wars that had really interesting eyes. I think they helped out Padme, or Padme helped out them. Uncle somebody. There's like an uncle, like a uncle in quotes, alien guy.
He was a Rodian.
Was he a Rodian?
Yes, he was. A member of Greedo's race.
Yes. And Sebo from last week, or as we are recording, a couple minutes ago.
Great. So we're commenting directly on events from the previous episode. Serial in nature here, certainly.
And great acting out of not just Freddie Prinze Jr.'s voice acting, but kind of the visuals of Kane in there. After my comment last week of the show really knows how to nail the end of the teaser act, end acts, to add to the title card, that was not a particularly strong one since it just kind of happens
the same scene.
Yeah, exactly. So you know what? Star Wars Rebels, I'm not happy with you.
You know what I need is a little bit of explanation into the symbols. So Kanan wears this baseball-esque shoulder armor, you know, so he doesn't get hit by the pitcher. And there's a symbol on it. No explanation for it. Ezra wears his little jacket. There's a symbol on it. Same situation. You know, something. We get enough out of the decor on Sabine to get it. Yeah, just help us out a little.
I would also wonder why you're strapping on armor on one arm but not the other.
Again, you don't want to get hit. He bats left-handed. He doesn't want to get hit by the pitcher.
maybe that's another Rebels novel as yet unwritten. The one that's out there, fantastic. The title escapes me. I've mentioned it on the podcast before. Yeah, him playing a game that he heard from Lando, the game of base. Just as you might recall in the first book in the Zahn trilogy, Lando introduces Luke to an exotic dish, a drink called hot chocolate, which I still remember being a kid and reading that and going, oh, that's dumb. Dumb.
So dumb.
I'm not a huge fan of this episode. Now, I don't know that I've seen it more than the one time when it aired. Oh, good. Pete, we're staying on Lothal. Oh, the thing that they need is on Lothal.
Yeah. I am a big fan of this episode, having seen it. This is the fourth viewing, and when you have Frank Oz play a little green character whose syntax is strangely inverted, it's always a win.
The Frank Oz presence in this episode is a great one, don't get me wrong. Was the plan 3 minutes ago, was the plan that they were going to use the Phantom to get away from the hustle and bustle, or to take the Phantom to wherever his visions were going to lead him?
I think it was a little of both, in the greatest tradition, Matt, of what you call story baloney.
Is the Phantom capable of hyperspace travel? If the answer is no, then I guess we shouldn't be surprised that we're staying on Lothal, Ezra. There is your story baloney. Let's take the ship that can't go any farther than the planet to find the thing that might be anywhere in the universe. Wait, it's on the planet. Thank goodness we took the lifeboat. So I think for me, there's the... I'm not opposed to religion and stories, don't get me wrong. But the Jedi religion aspect of the story, I find a little bit less compelling than, I don't know, military intrigue or even, you know, we're going to go through the blockade to get stuff to people who need it. I don't know, it just speaks to me a bit less.
Yeah, I have to agree.
Maybe it's also just kind of PTSD from that Clone Wars episode or episodes where they go to the land of The Legend of Zelda and fight with good force and bad force and Magic Dad Wizard.
Yeah, that was
anime. I still don't know what that was.
Not the finest hour. It was The Legend of Zelda is what it was.
Like, I get that Clone Wars gave the storytellers opportunity to do, like, hey, we're going to do Godzilla on... Oh, no. Pete, you've made me nervous. I never know... You make me feel like I don't know the right way to pronounce the Imperial capital planet.
Coruscant?
Coruscant, which is what I wanted to say, but I'm so gun-shy.
Were you going to go with the noobish Coruscant?
I don't know anymore. But, hey, we're going to do Godzilla on Coruscant. We're going to do, you know, a World War II. We're going to do, like, there's those things in Clone Wars. Maybe it was like, hey, let's do The Legend of Zelda. Jet Lucas likes it.
Evil Link.
It takes dedication of the highest order to sit in a meditative position when you are dying.
Indeed.
It's the allegory of the cave.
It is. Plato would be proud.
Pete, should we... how would you respond to the notion that this is canon, this is ongoing, it is unlikely that the Star Wars Rebels storyline is going to end with, you know, like Ezra being gunned down in a blaze of glory, same for Kanan. The fact that these two are presumably out there in the original trilogy story time, I'm going to be real specific, how does that intersect with Yoda's statement that, you know, you're the last Jedi or, you know, blah, 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 to Luke?
Matt, I'm going to say that it, you know, the truth depends greatly to the truths we cling to. And was Ezra ever a Jedi? Then he's not a Jedi. Building a lightsaber and wielding one are two different things than being a Jedi.
And certainly, and how shall I put this sensitively, there are those of us, you and I know our pal, Michelle on Twitter, agrees as well, that there's probably some non-Disney XD behaviors going on between our space mom and space dad that are decidedly un-Jedi-like in that they're probably sharing a bunk during Huggy Facey.
Are you alluding to a Jedi being attached to a non-Jedi?
The last time.
Physically attached?
Physically, yeah. The last time that happened, Pete, it was like an arm and a leg.
You know, maybe docking the ghost and the phantom?
Is it true that the phantom looks bigger in warm skies than in cold skies?
You faked me out there for a second. I thought you were going to go in another direction.
Pete, how many people in the 8 to 17 demographic buy that any of this is happening?
Bought. Few of them.
Yeah. It's a little long for my tastes, given that I don't think even your intended core Disney XD audience believes that the Inquisitor suddenly appeared behind the door and Kanan and so on and so forth.
And now we've got lightsaber dysfunction. So again, we're completely out of archetypal myth.
I think he's learning that, you know, it happens. And what you need to do is you need to focus. I need to rebound. And that's not the way to rebound.
It happens to a lot of future Jedi, Matt. It's okay.
Wait, but how could he fall? Oh, this must still be a vision. I don't know the particulars of what it's like to have this kind of lucid hallucination. I guess here's what I'm trying to say. Pete, if you had lived the life Ezra lived, at what point do you go, oh wait, I'm in the magic bleeping force cave, maybe this isn't real?
We get it as viewers, whereas the character clearly is not making the connections.
Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if we would. I mean, if you were existing in some sort of constraint where you can say, oh, I must be plugged into the Matrix. Oh, I must be on the holodeck. Then your brain can quickly say, all this input that looks real is not real. You have a box to put it into. Without that box of, hey, there's a place where things look completely real, but they're not, because of schizophrenia or because of technology, because of force powers, whatever it might be, I guess there's a bit of wiggle room. But this lengthy hallucination here just feels like story keeping time. It's not story advancement.
Padding.
Yeah.
It's gristle. And what's not done well in an otherwise well-executed episode.
Then if you knew it, why didn't you all of a sudden like conjure, like, now I have lightsaber whip arms? Here we go. Wait, is the moment upon us, Pete? I thought the Yoda moment was coming. I suppose not. Pete, the language on the walls here, is that Dwarvish from Middle Earth? Because I mean, we all know George Lucas read Lord of the Rings multiple times when he was in college, and then he got a completely original idea of and then he decided to do an even more original idea of a little person plucked out of their pastoral existence to go fight the evil people in not the Hobbit, but the Willow. I'm going to take that no comment as an implicit, tacit admission.
Take it any way you like it.
Wow, that got turned around quite quickly. See, you know what he discovered there, Pete? There is no spoon.
There is no spoon, and here's where we overcome, and it's no wonder that Yoda shows up here, the stumbling block in the story.
The stumbling block in what regard?
In terms of the padding of, oh, this is happening, it's not happening.
Pete, do you think it's possible that the genesis of this episode was, hey, we got Frank Oz contingent on a script, but it started with, hey, we got Frank Oz, therefore we have Yoda, therefore who's going to write it?
Well, that Oz did not voice Yoda in the Clone Wars, and to get him here and his first canonical appearance since the Clone Wars arc to close that show officially, I think is, you know, not a mistake.
Do you think they couldn't get him for Clone Wars, perhaps because they knew it was going to be a recurring character and the cost would be, like, I don't know what.
I don't think it was cost dependent. As much as they were spending on those shows, I don't think they, all right, this is Oz's quote, that's a bridge too far. I really don't think that's the case.
Yeah, I had forgotten that they were, as somebody's quote is, they were spending quote Pixar money on Clone Wars. We do get to see Yoda in this episode, right? Because I don't want to go on a well-worn diatribe of, look, they're not animating half of this because then you get to save money. I still contend, though, and this is probably also well-worn, that you can see the seams of the tightly pulled purse strings throughout this first season. And I hope that that is much less of an issue for season two. Pete, do you know why he chooses the path, this middle path?
Because it's the path of the Jedi.
Because the air is much sweeter there, which is what Gandalf discovered in the Mines of Moria.
That's what you and the rest of the dwarves tell yourselves.
Except there's one thing he doesn't want to change about the current arrangement, and it's the bunk assignments on the Ghost. Fun fact, only Sabine has a private suite. As I believe our pal Michelle said on Twitter, there was this hope of, obviously on Disney XD you're not going to show like the two of them waking up in bed or something like that, but just... She said words to the effect of, like, just give me a little something. Give me some kind of nod that as an adult you could be like, hey, he was just walking out of that room and pulling his shirt down or something, where as an adult where it still was 100% G-rated, but I suspect the Disney brass are all over that. Maybe they'll save the shenanigans for the just right around the corner Disney live action show that they've been working on for the last 12 years. All they need is 100 scripts and somebody who's going to pay for all of them.
Yeah. There they can flesh out, Matt, all of those questions.
Hopefully, even though, you know, George Lucas now is no longer connected to Lucasfilm, hopefully they can get Rick McCallum to executive produce every one of those live action episodes.
Perish the thought.
The primary job here is to take George's vision and tell him yes. And then on the 15th and the 30th, money goes into my bank account because I still have a job. George is a genius. George wanted to have Baron Spampanoida played by himself.
Baron Papanoida, not Spampanoida.
Baron, what is it?
Papanoida.
Baron Papanoida. We said it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. We'll make sure you get a prominent cut. And if anyone says no, they're immediately fired by me. Pete, back to this episode. Nice that we've seen similar goings-on of this in Clone Wars to get the proper kyber crystal for your lightsaber. What's a kyber crystal? See, hey, it's...
What's an exposition?
And then it sinks beneath the sea.
I do like how they used the topography of the land to do that, and it's no surprise that Filoni was involved with this episode.
Bring those two statements closer together, because I understood
the
individually.
Inclusion of design to tell story.
I see. I wonder what Dave Filoni's future is in Lucasfilm. Does he just keep doing the animated stuff? Do they say, hey, keep EPing Rebels, but now we want you to have a hand in a movie in some, you know, whether it's production design, whether it's as a producer, as executive producer, you know?
I could very easily see him being involved with the films in the not so distant future.
I still contend, based on zero evidence, just a sense, a force sense, if you will, that he is looked upon by the Disney brass as like one of the old guard George Lucas types that they were happy to not, you know, they bought Lucasfilm, but they didn't get George Lucas. And if you think that wasn't intentional, it was.
Given that he presided over the best run of things that George Lucas didn't do in this franchise, that would be a very short-sighted mistake by Disney. And that they've even put him with this, they realize he's got the goods.
Well, Pete, you know what also has the goods is your Twitter interaction experience. And so many people know that. How can people be in touch with you as we just kind of reflect here on the awesomeness of the reveal of Ezra's lightsaber?
You can find me on Twitter at Peter, PieterJKetelaar, KetelaaR, 5,951 followers. Can't be wrong.
While I am personally on Twitter, it's Looking Back Lost, you can be in touch with the podcast. Oh, in four different ways. I'm going to tell you three. We are a fantastic geek on .com, the Twitter, and the Gmail. And tell us more about that last stop there, Pete.
If you like Facebook, you can go to facebook.com/fantasticgeek, all one word with the PH, and like us. It's the path of the Jedi, Matt.
You can put your thumb up just the way that Jedi temple rose up in affirmation. With that, Pete, I will say adios to all our listeners and give you the, as always, final word.
I can't find my kyber crystal. We'll be right back.